Hello everyone. You're welcome to another exciting edition of Breakout with Bidi. My name is Bidemi Nelson and I'm your host. Human trafficking has been a source of grave concern to many countries, especially for its significant contributions to forced prostitution. Many women and children are caught in this web after being ensnared with false promises of a better life and means of livelihood. Many others are further psychologically enslaved with the threats of voodoo and just cannot escape. And believe it or not, these people are all around you. They just might be those sex workers that some of us patronize. Some of us also spit out at them in disdain. And there are many others who lose their lives as a result of violence and other dehumanizing conditions. Today, we will be addressing prostitution and we will be focusing on forced prostitution and human trafficking. Like I promised you, we'll be having a guest on the show today and she's the founder of Freedom. Freedom is an organization based in Canada and leading the fight against modern day slavery. And permit me to quote from her website. She talked a little about herself. She said, in 2003, she moved from Oakville, Ontario, Canada to Honolulu, Hawaii, USA to pursue her university education. She moved into Waikiki onto a street named Kuhio Avenue. Now, if you stay in Waikiki long enough, you'll learn that this street is also known as Candy Lane. It's the track. Daily, she encountered prostitutes at her front door, and instead of rejecting them, she tried to engage them. Over a short period of time, she began to learn that the word prostitute, which we equate often with choice, should be replaced with prostituted. Once this word prostituted is introduced into your vocabulary, you can learn the word human trafficking. Let me introduce our guest for today. Her name is Shai Mbibiata. Shai, you're welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me today.
And how are you doing today?
Well, I have to say it's a bit rainy and it's coldy on the eastern side of Canada, but all in all, things are good. It's Sunday, so we try to relax on this day.
Well, I love the rain as well. Thank you for coming on the show. So let's hit it off with the questions I would like to ask you and many of my audiences would like to know. I like the choice of the word you used for prostitution. You call it prostituted. How did you come across this term and how different is it from forced prostitution?
Well, interesting enough, forced prostitution and prostituted, in many ways, they actually mean the exact same thing. I've chosen in particular to use the word prostituted in that I think it's a bit clearer in what you're trying to convey. And so as you read a little bit from my bio earlier, you had mentioned that prostitution is a word that we equate so much with the word choice. And therefore, when it's amazing how two letters on the end of a word can really change the meaning of it. And when I started to learn these girls' stories and started to learn that this wasn't a choice, this was not a lifestyle decision that they had hoped for, but it was a circumstance that they had gotten themselves into believing that it was going to be something different. And so I do strategically use the word prostituted girls, prostituted women and children and young boys, because I still think that the prostitution itself still lends many people to believe choice. So even if you replace forced prostitution with that meaning, it in turn means forced choice. But I think that there's a stronger message when you say prostituted, that it just sounds completely like these people are really being forced, and there's not a mixture of choice in that vocabulary when you use that word.
Absolutely. You're right, because basically with prostitution comes choice, and when you have it being forced, when you have a person being forced into it, it shows that that person hasn't given the consent to be a part of that trade. So I think prostituted is going to be incorporated into a lot of people's vocabulary from today. Thank you for helping us with that. Now, I'd like to know also, because it's believed that human trafficking is one of the major sources of procuring women and children for prostitution. Now, based on your experiences and interactions with victims, how true is this?
Yes, it's you cannot look at the world that we called prostitution without cross-examining it with the world of human trafficking. And oftentimes you'll see more often than not that what appears to be a case of prostitution is in fact actually a case of human trafficking. And because our society, our world has masked this huge conception that prostitution is a choice industry, it allows for pimps, it allows for traffickers to be able to get away with prostituting out women and children and totally getting away with it. So it completely helps to fuel, prostitution in itself fuels human trafficking, and it allows these traffickers to get away with what's, in my opinion, the world's most heinous crime.
Yeah, it's really disturbing, and it's also very sad. Another part of prostitution that really bothers me a lot is the incorporation of children into this illicit trade, and then we're looking at child prostitution here. We all know that child prostitution is a global crime. Now, in the course of your work, how often at time have you had encounters with a victim of child prostitution? And what is the usual condition in which you find them in the first process of intervention?
Mm-hmm. That's a great question. And with this is a global stat, but the average age that children are trafficked and forced to be sex slaves is 12 to 14 years old. And oftentimes when we think of this, you know, if you hear this term, you know, 12 to 14 years old, that children are forced into sexual exploitation, you think automatically of places like Thailand, places like Vietnam, Nepal, India. And for your viewers that are listening in today, this is a global stat. So this isn't just in India. This is in Canada. This is in the United States. And every 60 seconds, two children are trafficked for the purpose of sexual exploitation. So to be raped 15 to 20 times a day by men and also even by women, although majority is by men. And so this isn't a situation that is only happening overseas. And actually in the United States currently, there are an estimated 300,000 victims of child forced sexual exploitation that's going on right now. So we oftentimes, just even in Canada, I can give you a scenario right now. We have we're in the Halton region, which is where Oakville is located, and the neighboring region to me is Peel, and we work closely with the vice units and police forces for them to be able to rescue children and rescue women that are forced into this to be sexually exploited. And currently right now we have 25 cases of victims of human trafficking that are minors, meaning 18 and under. And oftentimes because their forced entry is about 12 to 14 years old, as you said, you know, what's the condition? There are common stories, but every case is a bit different. And these majority are girls. So you find these girls in complete lifestyles of shame, of they're completely numbed, almost desensitized to the reality of which they're being forced into. There's a long psychological process of restoration and rehabilitation that is needing to take place for these girls to finally be able to come to a place of healing. Oftentimes, you'll hear these girls referring to pimps and traffickers as their boyfriends because they have been picked up by these men who they have brought them into a what we call a wooing process, where they've really courted these girls from a young age of 11 years old, 12 years old, 13, 14, 15. So by the time that we are able to, or the police are able to rescue them, there's also a psychological barrier where these girls are having problems coming forth and testifying. because they feel that they that these traffickers, these pimps, are actually their boyfriends. And so there is a psychological process that needs to be taken with crisis counselors in order to start to unwind this very nasty, horrible process that's been done with them.
All right, Chai. You talked about being numbed and desensitized. Does that involve the use of drugs?
Yeah, definitely. From a very short period of time after being controlled by pimps and by the traffickers, drugs is definitely introduced. So is a lot of alcohol is introduced to that also helps to wean the girls off of the reality of what is actually taking place. But it also, especially with the drugs, forces that dependency to that trafficker, so that even if they were to try to leave, they don't know where to get their next fix from. And so there's a dependency that's also then created to these pimps and to the traffickers. The other further side to it is, I mean, you can only imagine that even yourself, you don't have to be 12 years old to imagine this, but you as a woman right now or as a young teenager, if you were being raped 15 to 20 times a day, in your head, you would begin to try to separate your soul, your brain, from your actual physical body. And you would try to remove yourself, and you would begin to start to think about other things while you're being abused and while you're being used as a product. And so there's different forms of numbing and desensitization that these girls and children are being forced to use. So like you said, yes, definitely drugs and alcohol are a huge element of that.
Yeah, Shai, and I know you're not a psychologist, but let me ask you this. Do you think trying to dissociate themselves from who they are, do you think that would lead to multiple personality disorder?
Like you said, I am definitely not a psychologist, nor do... Yeah. To all of your viewers listening, or even doctors for that matter that are listening today, that would not surprise me that could lead to, a multiple personality disorder and even different. Yeah, I mean, that would make complete sense because you're almost tapping out of one reality and tapping into another reality. And oftentimes you even see with drug addicts, and most people, I'm sure, listening today have seen, drug addicts that are on the streets and they're talking to themselves and yet they really do believe they're having a conversation with somebody. So it's a crossover between drugs that are being used and it's harsh drugs. This isn't just like marijuana, there's a lot of chemical drugs that are introduced, and so you would see that as a result of that. But then, yes, definitely conversations that they would end up having or different realities that they would tap into. So, yeah, that would not surprise me at all if you started to see that as a result of this horrific abuse.
This is disturbing. This is really, really disturbing. Okay, let's check out sex tourism. And how has sex tourism influenced the proliferation of the prostituted woman and child?
Mm-hmm. And you guys are based in California there, and the staggering fact is that Americans account for 25% of sex tourism in the world. Which, when I first learned that a couple of years back, I was completely shocked at that. And so when you see events like the Super Bowl taking place that just happened recently in the States, or you look at the Olympics that came to Vancouver, BC in Canada last March, you look at FIFA, the World Cup that came to South Africa. Whenever you see global sporting events coming together, you see political events coming together where there's massive amounts of people, you do see an influx in the demand for purchased sex. And when you see that influx, you do see also, you see human trafficking going up in those areas. And around those different events are based this word sex tourism. And again, sex tourism, it sounds like that's something that is... is consensual. It sounds like that's, even if you may not agree with the act itself, it sounds like it's something that is regulated, and it sounds like something that people aren't forced into. And yet sex tourism, there's a lot of sex tourism over in places like Thailand, for instance, in Germany, where you can actually go on different sex tours. And the extreme saddened reality is that you are seeing a lot of these women and children are being trafficked to satisfy the demand of those who are wishing to partake in sex tourism. In Las Vegas alone, Las Vegas is the United States capital for child sexual exploitation. And I deliberately choose to not call it child prostitution. Again, we equate the word prostitution with choice, and there is not a child out there that chooses and wishes to be raped by men 15 to 20 times a day. And so Las Vegas is the capital for child sexual exploitation that goes on right in America. And like I said, it's a staggering 25% of Americans who are partaking in sex tourism. So yes, it all comes together to fuel human trafficking.
All right, let me try and paint a scenario here. When I first came across the term sex tourism, I was made to understand that it involved people from richer countries, probably like the United States or other richer countries in Europe and America, traveling to these tourist nations to have sex with children over there. And that's basically child sex tourism, or to have sex with women over there, which is the sex tourism, so to speak. But when you have these acts being perpetrated in the United States or in places like Las Vegas, for instance, it brings to bear that some of these victims are being trafficked out of their countries into the United States. So it's not just sex tourism, so to speak. It's a combination of human trafficking, smuggling of these victims. Am I correct, Shai?
Yes, it would be, yes, trafficking victims into the United States. And also domestically trafficked. There's, and even I experienced this in the streets of Waikiki. There's a handful of girls that I became very close with who I ended up seeing them being forced on a circuit, meaning they were taken from Honolulu to LA. They were being brought to Las Vegas. And if they succeeded, meaning if they were making their pimp and their trafficker enough money that they weren't going to be returning back to Waikiki. And so it's not just internationally trafficked victims that are being brought into the United States to meet the demand, although that definitely does happen. There's an estimated 45,000 women and children that are brought into the United States every year from other countries. But then you also have domestically trafficked 300,000 women and children every year in the United States alone.
That's a very huge number. That's really a huge number. Okay, what are the risks associated with prostitution?
Well, I mean, oftentimes you hear the argument, you know, is prostitution should be legalized because that means that it'll be safer for the women. And one of the risks in that, and I would encourage, this is not a feminist approach on this issue, and I don't want to, you know, women have rights and so forth, and that's a completely separate conversation. But there's oftentimes when you hear about the risks of prostitution and what we can do to protect the women in this trade, and when you look at countries like Germany, New Zealand, Australia, you look at cities in the Netherlands like Amsterdam that have legalized prostitution. Amsterdam is a great study case to see how prostitution has actually not worked in their city, in the country, in the Netherlands. And they have actually successfully shut down one third of their red light district, and they're going to be shutting down the entire district, because their idea was we can tax on the prostitution so the government makes more money. And they said, well, we can regulate it. and we can regulate it in the sense that we can give out licenses to brothel owners, we can give licenses to the sex trade workers. We will demand mandatory checkups of the women for STDs and HIVs and so forth. And all of that sounds great in theory, and it's another thing then to see that played out. And what you start to realize is that not only is it not being able to be regulated, but you start seeing a ton of illegal black market brothels that come up. It allows for pimps and traffickers to literally overnight become legitimate businessmen. As soon as you legalize that, that is what you are turning pimps and traffickers into. And you now open up your country to be an open gateway for traffickers to bring in human trafficking victims, because now they're being brought in as sex workers, even though majority of these girls that are trafficked into that country probably don't even speak the language. They definitely do not think that they're coming to be a sex worker and to be forced to have sex with men 15 to 20 times a day. And then the greater risk is, how do you regulate these women and, you know, unfortunately, these children from STDs and HIVs? Because we're not asking the Johns, we're not asking the buyers to be HIV and STD free themselves. So by doing these checkups, again, we're not protecting the women and children of this that are forced into this trade, or even there by choice for that matter. You're really only protecting the Johns, because the Johns, if they have HIVs, if they have STDs, and they are wanting to buy that girl or they're wanting to buy that child, who's to say that they're not going to use a condom, and then that child or that woman is at risk of actually contracting HIVs and STDs. So, I mean, prostitution in itself is a very massive conversation, but those are a few immediate risks that pertain around it.
Yeah, and also, you know, this risk of violence towards them, it's something that really gets me really concerned for these people, because many of them actually lose their lives. Many of them actually can never be the same again. It's a disturbing trend. Would you tell us about your work in helping victims of human trafficking who are former prostitutes?
Mm-hmm. Well, like, there's two different categories. As you just said here, as former prostitutes. So I would, call those women former sex trade workers. And that's one category of people. And the others are survivors of trafficking. And what we do here in Canada is we partner with the best of the best. And we allow police, we allow vice units to do their jobs by rescuing. And we partner with different agencies here to then take these victims of trafficking into safe houses where they can receive counseling, they can receive healing counseling, and over a period of time, we help to rehabilitate, restore the dignity of these women, to help ignite the talents and passions that these girls and children naturally have bedded it within inside of them, and allow these girls a second chance at life and at a different destiny. And so we work with different agencies here in Toronto and in the greater Toronto area to be able to protect these girls and to eventually help reintegrate them back into society.
I came across an organization, I can't remember the name now, and they were talking about empowering many of these former sex workers, because many of them actually don't have an education, they don't have needed skills to have a job or keep a job. Does your organization do anything like this?
Yeah, that's a great question, and especially, you know, when we're looking at the average age that children are and women are forced into this industry is 12 to 14 years old. So if you get rescued, You know, you might be 15 years old, 18 years old, 21 years old, and you've already missed your prime education light, as you just, you know, mentioned. And then being able to be reintegrated back into society without a proper education is, you know, like you said, that is very difficult to do. And currently, actually, right now in Canada, we are partnering with different agencies to actually be able to create a curriculum almost like homeschooling, so that through the rehabilitation process, these girls can start to receive an education at the safe houses if they do not want to be a part of a school due to the sensitivity around these issues. And there's a lot of guilt, there's a lot of shame, there's a lot of uncertainty through this process of rehabilitation. So we are wanting to provide them the possibility of having an education while they're in a recovery state and still at a safe house. And we are also looking over the next year to 2 years to be able to have almost like grants or bursary funds set up for victims of trafficking that would give them the opportunity to be able to actually go back and get an education and to have the opportunity to even do a post-secondary education at a university or college.
That's brilliant, and I know it's really tough on many of these victims, especially the young girls who've missed out of having an education in their prime. But something just struck my mind right now, and that's the threat of relapse. How many of these victims who have been helped or assisted, how many of them have gone back into the trade, you know, gone back into forced prostitution, as if I may call it that way?
How many? Wow, that's a harder question to answer, to be completely honest. We have seen there are cases just over this year even where you will see girls, they will come forward and they're willing to testify. And then, you know, months later, while they're still waiting for the trial, they end up kind of going missing from under the radar, and you know that they have gone back into the trade. It is very difficult for these girls to come forward, and there's a lot of variables that are at stake and can also make these girls go back into the trade. So it is a story that you do hear a lot. To give you an exact figure, I would be incorrect to be able to tell you that, because even if a girl has been out for, you know, let's say about a year, we've seen cases where they end up falling back into that cycle. So it's almost like a relapse. You know, you hear about drug addicts that where they're going, you know, for rehabilitation, and they're doing detoxes, and they're going in for periods of time, and you always hear about, you know, them relapsing, you know, or people who are part of AA, and they could be a year without alcohol and then they relapse. So to give you a stat, it's hard for us for me to actually be able to give you an accurate figure, although it that does happen. So affirmative, I can say that.
That's another sad story. I just wish many of these girls will stay out of this and stay out of this heinous trade for life, you know. But then my heart goes out to the whole lot of them out there. Now, what's your general opinion of prostitution with respect to its contribution to the illicit success of human trafficking?
Well, you know, I kind of tapped in a little bit about that earlier, and the bottom line is that prostitution fuels human trafficking. It fuels it, and therefore, as long as it is fueling, it is forcing people to be in a situation where they do not want to be, you will not get my vote on prostitution. And this isn't like the 50%, 50% where you say 50% of people within this industry of prostitution are choosing to be there and the other 50% are not. They're way skewed. Over 90% of people that you see on the streets here in Canada anyways, if they could get out right now, they would. And therefore, when you when you hear numbers like that and when you hear these stories, prostitution in itself will not have my vote. It is definitely an avenue that fuels human trafficking. And as long as it is forcing women and children to be in these horrific situations, in my opinion, it just should not exist.
I think I kind of agree with you. Although, you know, there's this talk and move for increased legalization of the trade, and you talked about choice. But then, like you said, many of the people in this industry are actually not consenting to being in that trade. But then, what can they do? I'd like to thank you very much for coming on the show today. I'm sure many of our listeners have gained one thing or another. And before you leave, I'd like you to just give us a parting word. And basically, I just want you to tell our listeners how they can reach out to many of these girls and victims of human trafficking who are into prostitution.
Well, first, you know, your listeners who are listening today, and thank you for joining us this afternoon. You need to learn a few things about human trafficking and pick two stats. And if you go, you can go onto our website as a starter. It's www.freethem.ca to get some information and start to take a look around and starting to see that the girls on the street corners, if they look underage, if they're of a different ethnicity, that they're probably not there by choice. And we need to start to look at the girls on the street corners as victims to be potential survivors as opposed to a choice scenario. And right now in California alone, there are huge issues of human trafficking all the way up from San Francisco down to San Diego. There are tons of cases that are going on every day right in your own very state. And there are some fantastic organizations within the U.S. that are doing great work to fight human trafficking. And if people want to get involved, they can email us, and I'd be happy to hook them up with a great organization in California, but they're always looking for volunteers, so the help is always needed. So if people want to do something tangible, I would encourage them to get involved with an organization, an anti-trafficking organization. And if they just want to be a voice, then I'd just encourage them to do some research and to start telling people. And that is, education is the biggest area where we're lacking in society, because how can you fight something that you don't know even exists? So education is the first thing. Becoming aware is the first thing to really fighting human trafficking in our countries.
I absolutely agree with you, Shai. Thank you so much for coming on the show. It's been a pleasure having you today. We'll be on the next segment, which is News on Breakout. But before we get there, let's go for this short break. Welcome to Breakout on BD. This is your preferred talk show. We just finished a segment of the Undressing Prostitution Saga, and we will meet Shai Invidiata, the founder of Freethem in Canada. We would like to thank her very much for coming on the show. We'll move on to our next segment, which is On the Job Again. And like I said in my profile page, we're going to be checking out the deadly fears of an entrepreneur. the deadly fears of an entrepreneur. And before we start, a lot of people have been asking me questions about the reason why I included this segment on the show. So I'd like to answer that question. Now, here's your answer. Before I chose this segment as an intuition into the show, we had a couple of things that could come on the show. However, knowing the importance of the cohesiveness of this show's objective, we decided to choose this. Breakout BD is all about engendering the best interest of every child, and that includes the gainful employment of existing and prospective parents. So guys, that's why On the Job Again is on your preferred show, Breakout BD, and I hope I've addressed that question. And back to our topic, the deadly fears of an entrepreneur. Let's start by understanding who an entrepreneur is. I personally would like to call an entrepreneur a rebel who wants to be his or her own boss and who also has a great deal of stamina and drive. They also are people who see problems as opportunities. They are people who are positive, who communicate well, and enjoy working with people. Entrepreneurs are also people who have a strong need to succeed financially and otherwise, and certainly they are not afraid to make mistakes, but instead they learn from them. But it's amazing to know that even these people have their own fears. And talking about fear, it can be good and it also can be bad too. It may prepare you to put in your best and it may also deter you from maximizing available opportunities. Success Magazine has recently uncovered a few fears that you should keep your eye on, and they are fear of failing in business and the fear of inadequacy. So let me take it one after the other. Fear number one, the fear of failing in business. Now, businesses fail for many reasons. Competition grabs market share, funding disappears, society changes course, or a recession blindsides you. With every failure, there comes like a sort of secret toy surprise in the bottom of the cereal box. And that is, it adds value in strength, wisdom, and knowledge. So let's do a little soul searching after a failure. What mistakes were yours? And why did you make them? And what have you learned from them? For many entrepreneurs, failure is far more acceptable than living with the regret of never trying. So failure is not bad in itself, but when you never try, that's when it goes very, very ugly. Now, let's look at the next fear, and that is fear number two, the fear of inadequacy. Some prospective entrepreneurs never get past wishful thinking and daydreaming. They are often handicapped by fear of inadequacy. They keep questioning themselves, their talents and abilities, and as well as their products and ideas. These questions could include, am I smart enough to handle all that business will throw at me? Do I have enough experience? Will this product really deliver? These are some of the questions that many entrepreneurs usually would ask themselves. But rather than get overwhelmed by what you don't know, why not give yourself credit for what you do? Make a personal talent inventory and list skills necessary for your business. If you find inadequacies, make a point to learn what you don't know. For instance, maybe you can't bear a cold call rejection. Change your mindset and believe each no you receive is just one call closer to getting a yes. Or probably you are unconvinced that you can sell your products or services to someone. Why not try to focus on how your product can solve their problems instead? Jen Groover, author of What If and Why Not, a book about transforming your fears into action, says internal fears and self-doubt erode your ability to succeed. The truth is, until you can jump over your inner roadblocks, the outer ones will continue to stay firmly in place. And that's about that on this segment on The Job Again. Next week, we'll continue to discuss the remaining fears of an entrepreneur. But until then, go for it, guys. I'll be right back after this short break. Don't go anywhere. Hello, you're welcome to Breakout with BD. This is News on Breakout, our new and exciting segment where we bring you the hottest and the juiciest gist from Africa. I'm sorry for the mix-up earlier. I wanted to talk about this segment and then I moved on to our other segment on the job again. So I apologize for that mix-up. So let's hit it up with News on Breakout. And we're going to be starting from the giant of Africa, which is Nigeria. Now, after the country's just concluded elections, several arrests were made in relation to election crimes, such as multiple thumbprinting on several ballot papers. Also, in the last string of elections, it was divided into a two-day activity. The first batch of elections was held on Tuesday, the 26th of April, where only 24 states were involved. The concluding elections were held in the remaining 12 states on Thursday, the 28th of April. Now, the elections were delayed as a result of the violence and unrest in northern Nigeria. And those 12 states were all in northern Nigeria. EU observers, however, condemned the just concluded gubernatorial elections as it did not resemble the previous elections held in the month. They observed inconsistencies like underage voting and ballot box snatching. Also, there would be supplementary elections that would come up in Imo State in eastern Nigeria due to the stalemate results declared by the INEC office, which is the Independent National Electoral Commission, between the incumbent governor, Mr. Ikedi Oaikin of the ruling People's Democratic Party, and Rochas Okorocha of the ANPP opposition party. This is after the riots that occurred in Owerri, followed by protests that demanded that the ANPP candidate, Rochas Okorocha, be declared winner. INEC also confirmed Ngige winner of the senatorial seat in Anambra. Anambra is another state in eastern Nigeria. And while all of this was going on, there were three bomb blasts in Maiduguri, Borno State, while there was a bomb scare in Akwa Ibom INEC office. Also, we had bomb scares in Bayelsa State and Delta State. Those bombs were later discovered. But for the bomb blast that occurred in Maiduguri, there has not been reported cases of casualties yet. Also, in the week, 9 youth coppers in Nigeria who were part of the elections concluded in the country have been laid to rest. Their death was as a result of the violence that rocked the northern states of Nigeria. One of them, sadly, was a female who was pregnant and was reported to be raped before being murdered. They have been promised a state burial. Now let's move on to Morocco. According to E-News, a bomb blast killed about 18 people in a cafe at Marrakech. This place happens to be a tourist hotspot. It's also believed that 20 people have been killed. Officials say it's as a result of the explosion of gas canisters set off by remote control. They also believe that it bears the hallmarks of Al-Qaeda. That's a very sad story. And we're moving on to Uganda. And according to E-News, the Ugandan government has vowed a tougher crackdown on protesters. 200 people have been killed, including a baby girl who was shot in the stomach. About 700 have been injured. The protests are about the high prices of food and fuel. And we'll move on to Libya. And according to E-News also, Gaddafi has called for a ceasefire but has no intention of stepping down or relinquishing the hold on power. And Muammar Gaddafi is still the leader of Libya as we speak. And then we head on to South Africa, and a police station in Alberton, Johannesburg, has been detaining and jailing immigrants who have secured a legal asylum in South Africa. The police is believed not to understand the laws that they are supposed to uphold. And that's that about News on Breakout. For more gist and stories about Africa and around the world, you can contact me. I'll be more than happy to oblige you and give you the latest and hottest gist from Africa and around the world. Thank you for joining us on this segment. We'll be back after this short break. Don't go anywhere. Welcome to Breakout with BD, and we're on our exciting segment, another exciting segment, which we tag Angels on a Mission. Now, our Angels on a Mission for this week goes to the Family Support Center. This is a local center situated at Washington County and with employees who are there to help prevent child abuse and neglect. The center survives on money from fundraisers and grants, and it's able to keep the place running with the help of volunteers and sponsors. The Family Support Center held a miniature golf fundraising at Fiesta Family Fund Center this Saturday, April 30th. The event was between 8 a.m. to 11 a.m. and all the proceeds have been promised to be used to purchase the current facility used by the Family Support Center and hopefully to provide more employees so that the center can stay open during the hours of 2 p.m. and 5 p.m. The director, Kristen Nelson, says that the center closes for those hours because it cannot afford to stay open. And what really intrigued me about this center is the type of services rendered. And one of those services was discussed by the assistant director, Laura, and she called that service the respite care. And she said the respite care is the most popular of the services offered. And respite care is offered to parents of children up to 11 years old and foster parents. It's similar to babysitting, and its purpose is to help parents that need a break so they can take care of things they need to do. Parents can leave their children at the center for up to 72 hours. Now, the miniature golf tournament was for all ages, and was the charges was $5 for singles and $15 for a family of four. And this just shows you what some organizations are doing to expand their services and reach to many of the children around them, and many of the children who are constantly under the threat of being abused or violated. So I'd like to say thumbs up to the Family Support Center. I want to say thank you for this wonderful job that you are doing. And so far, so good. We have seen the negative biases caused by human trafficking and its effects on prostitution. Next week, we'll be having another major discussion, and believe me, it's going to be a big mind blower. And the topic is tagged "The Implications of the Legalization of Prostitution on Human Trafficking." And this week we looked at undressing prostitution with respect to human trafficking and forced prostitution. And next week is going to be better. Remember to always be the part of the change that is fair. It starts with your intention. You've heard it today. We can all be a part of the war against child abuse. We can all be a part of the war against human trafficking. All it entails is for us to make one little extra effort. Get knowledge about it. Get information about it. And when you have that information, you have started the war against it. I'll catch up with you next week. Please check my profile pages for the guests that will be on the show next week. And I tell you, it's really going to be a big mind blower. I love you very much. Be nice to somebody, please. And remember, there's a child out there who needs your help. Do not turn a blind eye. Thank you very much. I'll see you next week. Bye-bye.